Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Richard Beyer, President and CEO of the Nebraska Bankers Association. In his current role, Richard leads the Nebraska Bankers Association. Previously, Richard served as Executive Vice President of the Nebraska Chamber of Commerce and Industry, leading a new initiative focused on Nebraska's long-term competitiveness. Richard served 8+ years for 2 different governors as the director of the Nebraska Department of Economic Development. Richard's previous experience included serving as executive director of the Development Corporation of North Platte and executive vice president of the Greater York Area Chamber of Commerce, York County Development Corporation. He began his professional career as the assistant city administrator in La Vista, Nebraska. A native of La Crosse, Kansas, Richard holds his bachelor's degree in political science from Fort Hays State University and a master's degree in public administration from the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Richard, thank you for joining us on today's show.
Daniel, it's a pleasure to be with you.
I always like to give our guests an opportunity to really share their story about how they fell into this world of finance, because everybody has their own unique story and their own unique circumstances that led them to where they are today. So, Richard, what is it that got you started in the banking world?
You know, Daniel, it's a great question. I probably never thought I would be a banker or tied to banking growing up. But I would tell you my hometown in Kansas saw a significant banking turmoil in the 1980s during the ag crisis.
Okay.
And we lost a number of banks at the time. So I was a sophomore, junior in high school and watching our banks be closed and the impact that had on our community. So that left a lasting impression and really led to my initial work in terms of economic development and chamber of commerce work. And was fortunate enough to work for 2 great governors here in Nebraska to help build our economic base and position our state for growth. And as Governor Hyneman was being term limited, I was looking for new opportunities. And that bridge between the government and private sector has always been an important piece of that for me. And so the NBA was sort of a natural fit. Mm-hmm. So I've had to learn a lot about banking, quite frankly, but I think it's been a good fit for us and really enjoy the work helping our bankers make a difference in our great state.
So when was it that you transitioned into banking?
I'm sorry, Daniel.
When was it that you transitioned into banking?
I've been at the NBA about 9 years. So 2014, 2015 timeframe.
That's fantastic. That was an interesting time to kind of get into the banking industry.
It was.
Well, I'm really excited about our conversation, especially with your background, because we've got a lot of good topics to really discuss today. The first place that we're going to start is as the president of Nebraska Bankers Association, it's really housing, and how do you see banks getting involved in supporting new housing, or how can a bank support access to new housing? What do you see banks doing?
You bet. Well, it's a great question and something that our association has really been a driver in our state, especially in terms of, if you look at historically, banks have been very directly involved in working with low-income housing tax credits and projects like that. So they've been very active in that affordable housing space. But I think what we're seeing, especially in states with a huge rural presence, and that is the ability to create what we'd call workforce housing, which means a little higher income so that you may not qualify for affordable housing, but still sort of that missing gap between housing availability and what I'd call our frontline employees and all of our communities across the state are looking for. So, we see a lot of our banks getting very involved in local not-for-profit work, CDFI organizations, community housing development organizations, and making concentrated efforts to provide leadership and also to try and find solutions in that housing space. Here in Nebraska, we've taken a bit of a different stance. We worked with our legislature to create a new set of funds that helps communities build supplies of housing. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily tied to income, but the Rural Workforce Housing Fund here in Nebraska is really designed to help communities step up and create additional housing supply that meets the needs of sort of the next generation, because you're not going to see, what we see in our rural communities in particular, the houses need some work. Mm-hmm. They probably need some granite countertops. They need a new furnace and air. So not only are we talking about rehab, we're also talking about stimulating new construction.
That's fantastic.
The other thing we're Yeah, the other thing we're seeing in terms of where our banks are headed, and that's trying to encourage their local schools to bring what I would call shop classes back to the kind of the mainline education system.
Yeah.
You know, one of the challenges in building homes in not only urban and rural locations, but also many of our urban locations, is just a lack of subcontractors and contractors.
Okay.
We've spent a lot of time forcing kids to think about a four-year degree, but quite frankly, many of them are better off to pursue a technical skill and probably will make more money and probably have a better work-life balance.
Yeah, I was actually reading an article about that myself the other day where it seems like there's a substantial decrease in the quote-unquote dirty jobs or the non-degree jobs, and there's been a substantial lead on this. So I think that's fantastic. So if you have a bank that's actually doesn't have too many practices or too many policies in place right now about developing their community, what are some ideas that maybe a bank can do to implement some things? What kind of things would you encourage them to be looking forward to implementing?
You bet. And initially, obviously, it's things like low-income housing tax credits and those kinds of projects. But I would encourage them really to sit on the boards and get engaged with their local housing groups. I think just about every community in the country now has some group focused on housing, whether it's affordable housing, workforce housing, or housing as a whole. And so we've seen some great examples in our state in places like North Platte and Columbus, as an example, which, towns of 20 to 30,000 people, where our banks are actively involved in helping to stimulate new construction. And whether that's through financing or contributions, home buyer education is also an important piece of that. So all of those things matter and are really a way for banks to get involved.
Well, that's actually a perfect transition into our next question. I'm glad you said that key phrase there, home buyer education. I mean, this next part is really a two-part question. I think one of the greatest skills that an individual can learn in today's world is really financial literacy, like how money works, how credit works. How do you see banks educating their employees and their staffs, or what are some additional ways that a bank can really accomplish this education part?
You bet. Again, a great question. It's something I spent a lot of my days thinking about. I'm honored to sit on the Nebraska Council on Economic Education, which is our statewide not-for-profit that's looking at financial education. And what I would tell you from my perspective, I think historically a lot of this information was taught in sort of consumer classes at the high school level. And those kind of got pushed out by Calculus 2 and those kinds of classes. And it's similar to sort of the housing trades conversation we just had. We need to bring some of those life skills back into the classroom. The other thing that I think is interesting to me as we do our research is that we're seeing a number of opportunities for students to really learn at home. I think there's less of those family meals and maybe where parents and extended family don't talk about money or finance in front of their kids. And so kids aren't learning some of those skills at home either. So we've got to do a better job as a greater community to try and bring financial education across the board. I know here at our office, for example, and it's similar with many of our banks, the firm that runs our 401k, we bring them in shop a couple of times a year to meet one-on-one with employees. Mm. And we think that personal connection is really, really important. So if we have banks who aren't doing that, I'd encourage people to bring that in as a service to their employees. The second piece of that we found with our 401k providers, they also have a more in-depth solution in terms of looking at sort of a long-term, how do you balance your assets and your liabilities and long-term plan for long-term care insurance and all those packaged together. And I think that really rolls together. So if banks are doing that, they really need to think about engaging a professional that does that and really somebody that specializes in helping employees understand that comprehensive look. As a personal example, my wife and I went through it. It took me about 8 hours to accumulate all the data and paperwork that I needed before our meeting.
Wow.
So it was pretty in depth.
Yeah, that is absolutely. I mean, if it's taking 8 hours to gather, that absolutely is an in-depth conversation. And I think that's fantastic. So what are some things that maybe... So I love the concept of bringing that education back into the schools, because I think that's vital and important, just like the shop classes, life skills 101. I mean, that's the purpose of the education system, is to teach how to survive in today's world, in today's environment. What are some things though that maybe a bank can do on a consumer level basis? Is there anything a bank can do to educate their customers? Because I mean, for a lot of people, even once they get out of schools, walking into a bank and opening up their first account is going to be really their first experience having a bank account or knowing how a bank account works. What can a bank do to educate their customer base?
You bet. It's a great question. And you're going to see a wide variety of alternatives that banks are pursuing. A lot of banks now have some kind of financial literacy on their website mm-hmm. for people to kind of walk through. I know we partner here in Nebraska with a couple of firms. EverFi is an example with a firm that does sort of gamification of financial literacy. So it's more engaging mm-hmm. rather than lecturing.
Yep.
We think that's important. So there's a lot of those providers that are out there. So I encourage every bank to engage in some sort of an educational platform like that for their customers. I think the other thing is we are spending a lot of time thinking about financial literacy with diverse communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Latino community, for example, we have a couple of bankers who are helping us better understand how do we better deliver sort of financial literacy and financial education to the Latino community that has a sizable presence across our state. So there's a lot of work that we have to do to educate people about that. So I just think as we continue to focus on that, I think the other thing in Nebraska, and there's a few other states that do it, we actually have in-school savings banks.
Okay.
So we actually have banks go in and set up a bank charter in local elementary schools. Mm-hmm. And the kids then come out and they're really engaged in saving on an ongoing basis. And, you know, the banks come in and they get a chance, the students serve as student tellers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a workforce recruitment tool in mm-hmm. some ways. So we think that's a great tool really to be a proactive and reward the kids. You know, you'll see a lot of the banks will take in t-shirts and pens and pencils and stickers. And
mm-hmm.
we have some banks who will literally match savings dollars that the kids are putting in. So it's really a piece of that. We have almost 50 of those across our state now. And I think we've got more than 15 planned for the spring and summer and fall to be open yet this year. So we'd love to see an in-school savings bank in every school in our state.
That's fantastic. I now that you mentioned it, that was actually my first account was one of those in-school ones. And I remember getting all that fun swag that you just think is the coolest as a kid.
So you bet.
Obviously, but educating the consumer base is incredibly important, incredibly vital to the banking industry. But hand in hand goes with that is having competent enough staff, competent enough, educated enough staffing in order to meet the needs of the community. And you mentioned a key phrase there that's been really a huge subject of conversation amongst the regulators, but diversity. I mean, diversity mm-hmm. not only in the consumer base, but diversity also in our staffing and in the bank staffing. How can a bank consider all that? Or what kind of consideration should a bank take when they're looking at properly educating their staff, having a diverse staff, having a competent staff? What should a bank be considering?
Well, I think that competent staff's really the first hurdle, and that's for bankers to come in and hire folks with talent.
Mm-hmm.
They may not always know finance. I mean, I'm a guy that didn't know much about banking 9 years ago, but those are the things that you can learn. But if you have people that are passionate and committed to making others' lives better, that's really the first threshold. As we think about our diverse and unique populations, I think we've got to do a better job of educating those young, diverse future workers earlier. So one of the things we're encouraging banks to do is spend more time at the high school and junior high levels. Historically, the banking community has given scholarships, and our organization was sort of a similar model that we gave out scholarships to kids who were looking to be juniors and seniors in college. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, by then, most of the students had already made up their mind about banking.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's really now beginning to take that messaging down into the kids and meeting them on the front lines in the high schools and the junior highs. And so you talk about careers in banking, but you also talk about finance and find kids who are passionate, because the nice thing about banking to me is that literally bankers impact every important decision life point along your trail in life, whether that's, you know, buying your first car or starting a business or financing college. And so we just have to do a better job of matching those skill sets and that interest with the next generation. And that takes some work here in Nebraska. We have been doing a lot of work with diverse bankers
mm-hmm.
bankers who come from diverse backgrounds. We're working really hard. That may mean banks opening up, and I'm going to say being more liberal with things like dress codes, offering more flexibility for people that have young children. I mean, there's a lot of that that goes into creating a culture that really works well for all employees.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. That serves as a great foundation for really having a diverse staff and a diverse team. So that's something that goes hand in hand kind of with that education topic that we're talking about, is an element of fraud. I mean, fraud has been on the rise in recent years with an increase in the amount of, I'd say, even creativity or variety of fraud that's occurring. What can a bank do? So this is primarily geared towards like maybe smaller or mid-sized banks that don't necessarily have the assets or resources that some of the larger banks do. But what can a bank do to minimize their losses and really stay on top of the curve as far as fraud's concerned?
Right. And I think we've all heard the saying, you know, you're probably going to have fraud. The question is, if you'll have it, it's going to be when you're going to have fraud. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to that. And so the first thing I would tell you, and it's mostly been from personal experience the last few months, as our banks across the state of Nebraska are switching softwares or core providers, one of the things that they have to do is make sure that they're pulling all the fraud levers as part of this. Sometimes when you make that transition in software, it's one of those things that gets overlooked. So I think that's one of the first challenges, is to have our banks make sure that they're really pulling and putting all those things in place inside of their system. The other thing is just purely education, and that education starts young. And if you look at some of the most recent research, and it really ties back to the financial education we just talked about, if you look at what's going on right now, an overwhelming increase in fraud is occurring in the high school and college level ages from students who are being subject to fraud. And so, you know, the kids have learned to live in this natural economic or technology platform world. And so they are more free to kind of give out their information, and they're more trusting. And so we have to remind even the young people that we talk to that there really is a real risk in being out there with some of your information. And so it's pretty simple. And my kids probably are guilty. I've talked to them a couple of times. Let's make sure let's make sure we're not using the same password at home as we are at school and other places. And I know that that's a lot of work and can be a challenge, but I think there's a lot to start with the education of our young people. For folks who are more middle income, folks who might be in two or three different banks, there's always that have three or four or five different banking relationships. There's always that tendency maybe to use the same password in all of them. And quite frankly, that's not a good idea. And then I think as more senior members or the more elder customers, I'd call them the wiser customers. But as they jump into technology platforms and begin to use mobile banking, we really have to educate them every day. And we're seeing some banks do some really nice social media outreach. Banks Never Ask That campaign through the ABA. There's a lot of national campaigns that people are engaging on. And social media efforts tied to fraud don't cost a lot if you're doing it well. And so I'd encourage banks, if they're not doing it, to be very proactive with their customers as part of that process.
Yeah, we see a lot of those campaigns kind of come through the Review Alliance side of things when we're reviewing people's advertising campaigns. So I agree with you. Having a good, valid campaign or a good quality campaign can do a lot towards educating individuals about the different fraud things out there.
Yeah, one of the things, Daniel, I might just add to that. One of the things that's interesting to me is what I'm going to call cross-generational communication. Mm-hmm. And so your frontline tellers, personal bankers, universal bankers, one of the things they ought to be doing with every customer when they come in is asking questions about, especially if you're talking to maybe a more senior member who's not as comfortable with technology. And that really is asking the question, have you updated your password? Are you comfortable with the technology? Have you, implemented multi-factor authentication? Those kinds of questions. Again, it's just really about being more proactive with our staff at the bank level.
And I'd argue that even adding to that, just having that relationship to be able to ask that, like, are you doing this? Are you doing that? And you mentioned that earlier of having that connection or that relationship with the banker. And I'm right on board with that.
Yeah.
So we are running a little bit short on time, but I did want to give you the opportunity to answer the next question. That is, if you could give one piece of advice? So from your experience, doesn't have to be about education, doesn't have to be about even necessarily banking in specific, but if you could give one piece of advice towards those bankers or towards the banks that are listening to this podcast, what would you give?
Well, it probably goes back to my experience in 1985.
Okay.
And that's to watch when those banks closed and the impact that it had on my community. So clearly banking is kind of the focal point for every community. And mm-hmm. So I would just encourage our bankers to serve as that focal point, be proactive, engage your customers, and keep the focus on the needs of those customers long-term. So whether they're, you know, Generation Z or Generation X or wherever they might fit on the spectrum, making sure that the focus always stays on the needs of your customers.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of relationship banking myself, so I completely agree with that. Well, Richard, we really appreciate you joining us for today's podcast. Thank you very much for coming on as a guest.
Daniel, honored to do it. It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our industry and how we can play a greater role in sort of helping our consumers and our customers.
Thank you. And for everyone else listening in, that's Banking Matters.